This episode of React Podcast is brought to you by reacttraining.com. In-person, hands-on training for development teams from React community leaders and experts. Visit reacttraining.com to learn more.
This is React Podcast. I'm Chantastic, and right now we are at JS Conf. So if you hear some murmuring in the hallways, some drones going, some espresso machines, that's what's happening. Today, I have the privilege of speaking with Burke Holland.
What's up, man?
Who is amazing. I don't follow a lot of things online, but I actually follow both of your projects, or two of your projects religiously, which are Five Things.
Yes.
And VS Code Can Do That.
Ah, yes. Yeah, Five Things, it's very popular. We have literally dozens of followers, so it's great to finally meet one of them? 36 subscribers that we have.
You have to have more than that.
We have a few.
I love it. Okay, so I don't usually dive in like this, but how did you land on that?
On Five Things?
On Five Things. How did it get started?
Oh, that's a great question. When I left my previous employer to go work at Microsoft about a year ago, I went to work for a guy named John Papa, who's a well-known in the Angular community. And I'm not super heavy into Angular or that community, although I will say I've been to several Angular conferences. The greatest community in the world. Nicest
such
bunch
great
of folks.
People.
Yeah, really, really, really welcoming. And so John had this idea for a show. It was actually John's idea. And he wanted to do a show that was basically, you know, five things about something.
Yeah.
And so we began to talk about it. And then I had this idea in my head that it should be kind of like Between Two Ferns. I don't know if you've ever seen that show.
I absolutely have.
Right. Which is, it's hilarious because, you know, some of the questions are nonsensical. And so we had this idea of like, can we talk about technical content and be kind of ridiculous?
Yes.
And still
do all the
something
sound
that
effects
people.
Right. The, yeah.
A lot of quick cuts. Like, let's do something that just is not being done and see whether or not, you know, people find any value in that, if they enjoy it. So there's an entertainment aspect to it, but it's also a chance for people to see, you know, other individuals that get interviewed.
Yes.
Which is the fun part. Yeah. We got to go to some fun places. Dan Abramov let us come to Facebook.
I saw that one. Yeah.
Yes. He was so nice. He was our first guest. So that was great. We went to Google. And interviewed Ben Lesh, which was also great.
Yep.
So cool to be Microsoft and going to these different places and interviewing people from different places.
So is it sponsored at all by Microsoft, or is it kind of an independent endeavor of yours?
Yeah, it is sponsored by Microsoft. So they pay the bills, they provide the film crew, they sign off on the budget. I don't know why. Somebody thought it was a good idea. Terrible decision. But they do. The show is about JavaScript. It's about the cloud. Mm-hmm. I do work on the Azure team. So, you know, JavaScript in the cloud really is our focus. And so the point of the show is really to not just raise awareness about some of the JavaScript things that you can do in Azure, but also really to shine a light on the different folks that are in the community and the people that are working on the various projects that you will probably use as a JavaScript developer, either in the cloud or not.
Or not.
And so we're just thankful that, you know, Microsoft is either not paying attention or we've fooled them into signing off somewhere. Really stuck it in like it's like a government bill, you know, like it gets signed and like on
just
page
stick
like
it in there 6,000 really
exactly.
Boring stuff.
At some point somebody's gonna be like, what is this?
How much are we paying for this again?
Right. Ridiculous.
Well, it's one of my favorite things about the show is the fact that you sit down with people who are known or unknown at different companies than Microsoft and just kind of talk about our shared experience programming and kind of allow them to showcase a handful of things that they know that may be new or kind of old hat for the people. And it's really fun.
Yeah, it's been very interesting. I've been very thankful for all the guests that we've had. Everybody has been so kind.
Yeah.
It's very intimidating to sit down with somebody like Dan Abramov and talk about React. It's
right.
Like, what am I going to say in this interview? But he's so gracious and so kind.
He is.
And I've just found that everybody that we've talked to, and they've been very extreme. We had on Anders Heilsberg, who is the guy behind TypeScript.
Really?
And C#, right.
Awesome,
he's a distinguished
awesome.
Engineer
yeah.
or a technical fellow at Microsoft, one of those two. and just the nicest guy. He did, his interview was with John, but I'm just always shocked at the level of ridiculousness that people will put up with in interviews and sign off on. It's been great.
Well, I love it. I love it. Do you have a favorite one that you've been able to record?
Man, I have some favorite moments. It's a good question. We did one at Build that we haven't released yet.
Okay.
With a guy named Damian Brady, who's from Australia, and he's got this really dry sense of humor, and that one is hilarious. I think that's our season opener for season two.
Awesome.
Which is coming back, I think, at the end of September. So that one was a lot of fun. Being at Facebook was super interesting, right? It's just sort of exciting. Being at Google was fun. We shot some in downtown Franklin, which is outside of Nashville, which is where I live, with Elijah Manor.
Yeah.
And Jonathan Creamer, who's another React guy. Those were a blast. Amy Knight was on.
Awesome.
We actually went to her because she didn't get out. So I was like, well, shoot, we'll bring the show to you. So we actually went to where she works and set up in a conference room. And she stepped away like after the stand up. She had like just enough time to shoot.
So. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's been really fun.
That has to be fun. I mean, how often are you traveling to do these?
You know, we try not to travel too much, but maybe 3 to 4 times a year.
That's awesome.
We either bring a camera person out or we'll go up to Redmond and, you know, shoot with, there's a lot of people. Like we shot with Sean Larkin, Webpack, because he's already in Redmond.
Yep.
There was a couple other folks. Jess Frizzell we had on the show. She was already there. That was another one that was very intimidating. Like, I had Jess Frizzell's on the show. What am I doing here? That one was a lot of fun as well. So yeah, about 4 times a year we travel and then we just shoot a bunch.
Yeah.
Right? So we should go and we'll shoot for like 1 day or 2 days. And at the end of that, you're like, oh man, I want to die. I don't think I can do this anymore. But then that buys you, you know, a month, 2 months of footage.
And then you're eager to get back out there again and talk to
you
people.
You forget. Yeah. Right? You're like, this is great. I love this.
I feel that way every time I give a talk. You prepare and prepare and prepare, and like right before you like do it, and maybe even a little bit after, you're like, I'm never doing this again.
Yeah.
Like, this was the worst experience ever. True. I didn't understand why some women get pregnant a second time until I did a talk, and I was like, I get it now, because that was the most excruciating pain I've ever been in, like emotionally, and you know, like some time went by and now I want to do it again.
Yeah, that's very interesting that you say that. My wife has been talking lately. She wants to be a surrogate.
Okay.
So we have 3 children. They're older. They're 14. And then I have twins that are 12. And so we don't really want to like reboot that.
But bottles and diapers all over
really
again.
She really wants to do the pregnancy thing again. And I said, baby, the last 2 times were really rough. Do you not remember? I don't think I've ever seen a human being in more suffering. And so it's bizarre, but yeah, she's super excited about doing that. So we're going to do it again.
Do it again.
Yeah. Why not?
So I wanted to ask, anytime I have someone on the show for the first time, I like to ask, how did you get into programming? What was your start?
Oh, that's such a great question. I was in the military. And when I got out, I went to college and I was a communications major originally, mostly because my mom told me that I should. And so that's what I did. While I was there, I met someone.
Good son.
Right. Exactly. While I was there, I met someone who was in information systems and she recommended to me to be in information systems. She's like, this is the future. This is where everything's going. And I'm like, cool. So I hate to say, Mom. That's how I got into tech, but that's literally how I got into tech. And then around that same time or slightly previous to that, I had gotten a Windows 98 computer. So unlike most people, I did not grow up coding. I had little interest in computers in high school and even the first part of college. It wasn't until I bought a computer that had Windows 98, at which point I became obsessed with user interface.
Yeah. It was brilliant.
It was so well done.
Yeah.
And the way icons looked and the curves of things and drop shadows. I mean, I was just fascinated. I would just sit in my room and mess around with Windows 98 for hours. And that's the saddest thing I've ever said out loud. It's the actual truth. And so going into college, I moved into information systems, not really knowing how I was going to parlay that into, you know, I didn't know the difference between back end or front end.
Sure.
I didn't know any programming languages, but I knew that I loved it. And so I got a degree in information systems. which is really a bachelor's of business administration. It's right. Not a engineering heavy degree by any stretch. And I went to work for, my first job was at a company called Jimmy Dean Foods.
Yeah.
Right.
And they make the breakfast sandwiches.
They do.
Right?
Yeah. They do. So there was a hog slaughter facility up the road from where I went to college where they would slaughter pigs.
Wow.
And they have computers at hog slaughter facilities, and those computers needed to be upgraded from Windows 98 to Windows 2000. So they sent a job rec to the college and said, hey, we need someone. We'll pay them $14 an hour on their own time. Just come out and help us do this. And nobody showed up. I was the only person that showed up for the interview. And so the lady that was running the IT there, her name was Amy Balthazar. She hired me and was like, by default, welcome aboard. And so with hogs screaming in the background, no joke.
No way.
Yes. We upgraded computers from Windows 98 to Windows 2000. So I did that for the last 2 years of college, and then they hired me on full time, moved me up north for a little while, and then we had a baby, and I managed to finagle my way into a healthcare company in Nashville doing SQL and Crystal reports and things like that. Once I was in programming, I got out of the data side because I was just terrible at it. and then moved into front end and did a lot of ActionScript. Remember FFlex? I did Flex. And then I took a job after that as a web developer, but they were doing .NET and they were doing ASP.NET web forms. And so I got in there and I was like, what is this? What is this? This is not the web. But I learned it's an abstraction. So when you learn the abstraction, it's powerful. And then, you know, after that, I got wrapped up with the Kendo UI project, and I worked at Telerik on Kendo UI for several years. And so I've been doing JavaScript only for the past eight, nine years.
Wow.
And I just love it. There isn't anything about JavaScript that I don't just absolutely love. I love it so much that when people dog it, I'm like, cool. Like, I don't even care. That's how much I like JavaScript.
Doesn't affect you at all.
No, at all. I'm like, you're wrong. Awesome.
Unconditional love.
Yes. I know it has its flaws, but to me, it's like poetry. Maybe.
Yeah. And I mean, the fact that it is so useful and the fact that it's found its way into so many things, it's hard to hate a language that is that prolific.
Yes.
Like something that you can learn and then just use in all kinds of weird places.
I mean, and the ingenuity that's gone into, you know, the new JavaScript frameworks and things like React and and Vue and Angular and all the different, like you said, all the different ways you can use it, all the places where it runs, it's so ubiquitous. Yeah, I just think it's one of those things where people are like, you know, JavaScript's bad. I'm like, well, maybe. But I don't think it really matters. It stood the test of time.
Yeah, it's definitely more good than bad if we're keeping score.
Absolutely.
So I've heard a lot of things about React at Microsoft. Specifically that Microsoft is using React for Office 360? 365? I'm sorry.
Yeah, so I have a limited amount of knowledge about that. I know that... So for instance, you can build plugins for Office with React.
Okay.
I also know for sure there are certain places in Azure, like certain dashboards that we have, like pricing calculators and things like that. Those are built in React as well. So, you know, Microsoft is a huge company and there's all these different projects and nobody really knows exactly what that team's using. It's not like this well-organized, standardized thing by any stretch.
That is so one thing that
it pops up here and there and you're like, ah, cool.
Yeah. It is kind of funny because you a lot of times you'll see like on the front page of these JavaScript frameworks, you know, used by, and it'll show like, you know, the five big companies, and then they're on all of the JavaScript frameworks. And I think a lot of it is because, you know, these companies are so big, they're using pretty much everything somewhere.
I would imagine. So I can say as far as React goes, it's definitely being used. Mm-hmm. I just don't know for sure. I think everybody's looking for this like big announcement, like Windows is being rewritten in React.
Right.
I don't have any of that, but it's definitely being used, no doubt.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about Azure. You said you're on the Azure team.
Yes, I'm on the Azure team. Specifically, I work on the developer relations side of the team. So there's been a lot of buildup of those folks in the past year. I think we've hired some wonderful people.
Yeah.
So it's been very interesting. I was a little hesitant when I was hired on at Microsoft because I did, first of all, I didn't know anything about Azure.
Yeah.
And secondly, you know, like I think most JavaScript developers standing from the outside, I was like, Microsoft's not too sure. But I went out and I interviewed with them, and I was really impressed with the way that they were trying to invest in developers and the development tools, specifically VS Code that they had created. You know, you say what you want about Microsoft, but when it comes to developer tools, they just make it, they've always made incredible developer tools.
Incredible tools.
Yeah, they really have. And then the whole culture inside of Microsoft was just completely not what I would have expected going in the door. At least on the Azure side, it's run very much like a startup. Everybody is, everybody communicates very well. It's very open. It's totally fine to try something and fail. The idea is that you should be willing to have conversations and reevaluate. And fail and recover and be okay. And so when we work with engineering teams, we work with them very closely, whether it be the Cosmos DB team trying to make Cosmos DB a database that meets developers where they are, trying to help get our hosting to a place where it helps JavaScript developers where they are, not where we think they should be, but what they're actually doing. And so one of the things that I really appreciate about Microsoft is that they listen, the engineering teams do, and they meet with us and they take our feedback seriously. And I'm always kind of incredulous. I look around, I'm like, are they actually listening to us? Like, wow, okay. This is great.
That's a pleasant surprise when you find that someone has listened to you.
Yes, exactly.
So what is, you'd mentioned that you didn't know about Azure going into Microsoft. Could you explain to the listeners, like, what Azure is, what it provides for developers?
And yeah, that's a great question. So Azure is the overarching term for all the different cloud services that Microsoft has. And there's a lot of stuff. So it's kind of like saying, you know, Amazon's web services, what all is there? Sure. So it's just a ton. On the Microsoft side for Azure specifically, you have all sorts of things. So, you know, if you start at the bottom, that's traditionally like, well, I want to put a virtual machine in Azure. That's like the simplest. And then if you, you know, you can abstract further from that and say, I want to put an application, but I don't want to worry about the machine. It's sort of like the platform as a service. And then there's the serverless Azure functions. And then there's a NoSQL database, Cosmos DB. And then there's things like key value store, Redis cache, you know, Postgres. There's cognitive services, which we're going to be talking a bit about today in terms of the AI and the machine learning. So it's basically anything that you could sort of need as a developer that might be available as a service, as an API call, even like Kubernetes orchestration, anything like that is in this giant warehouse of services called Azure, and you come in and you can just sort of pick and choose what you need and glue everything. It's like a Toys R Us for developers. And the best thing about working on the team is that I get free Azure. So I'm literally just in there, like, scraping things into my basket. We get this bill every month, you know, because they actually bill internally, and they're like, hey, can you make sure that you've killed off resources? And mine's always like, sorry.
I'm so sorry. Now, a lot of those are actually integrated in some way into VS Code.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, that's a good segue, Michael. Thank you for that.
That's my job here.
So VS Code has been, I think, for a lot of us, it's one of those things. I remember when they, here come the plates. You know what, though? I'm glad they came through, because I just remember I was talking about earlier. Microsoft calls it a growth mindset.
Okay.
So use this concept a lot, you know.
Growth mindset.
And when you hear it, you're like, oh, that sounds kind of cheesy. But when it actually plays out, it's really, really good, because what it says is that I'm going to listen. I'm going to take feedback. I'm not going to take that personally, because we're all just trying to move things forward.
Yeah.
And
failure is a part of growth.
Absolutely.
So it embraces the idea that, you know what, things are not going, like, you can plan all you want. You're still going to fail.
Right.
And that's going to be okay, because we're going to learn and we're going to use that to, like, move forward.
Right. And of course that just makes it a safe place to just try things and not be worried that, man, if I screw this up, am I going to lose my job? No, you're not. And you're probably going to be commended for trying something brave and new. So that's really cool. Oh, for the VS Code extensions. Yeah. So VS Code is an interesting editor, I think, because, and we'll move into the sort of Azure integration here, but it was one of those editors where I remember they launched it in 2015, and I was at Build, but I didn't work at Microsoft, and they were like, you know, a new text editor. And I thought, really? Is that what the world needs, is another text editor? We have Sublime Text. We have Atom. Like, I think we're covered here.
Yeah.
But I think one of the places I think we've all been shocked, at least I haven't, at how much VS Code has sort of filled in spots where we didn't even know that there were gaps. And so I talked to the VS Code, Amanda Silver, who's sort of the VP over there. And I asked her that question, like, why did we need another text editor? Who made that call? And the idea was that, well, you know, we have text editors, we have IDEs, but we don't have anything that sort of sits in the middle of those two things.
Yeah.
And so the magic of VS Code is that it is just a text editor, but you can just start plugging these things into it and you can make it a full on IDE if you want. Or you can just keep it as a text editor. And so what Microsoft wants to do is they want to make it as easy as possible for developers to get their code to the cloud or to develop with Azure services. And the easiest way to do that is to create extensions that just are right inside your editor. So for instance, like the Azure Functions extension, which you install, you can create functions from it. You can run and debug them locally.
Yeah.
You can deploy them directly from VS Code. Like all of that
stuff. Which is really challenging with some other function based or cloud function based services.
Right. I think that's generally the challenge with serverless is that it's cool and all. It's really hard to test and debug because it's not running on your machine. It runs somewhere else.
Yeah.
And so this idea that it should be really simple. If you're already using VS Code to pull in these other services that you might need. Another one that I really like, the Cosmos DB extension, lets you query the database just directly from VS Code. So you
That's
don't
crazy.
Need, I know you don't need an admin tool. You just write your queries and run them and your data comes back inside of VS Code and it's all in the same environment.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's really neat. I think that some of the better work that we've done is specifically in those VS Code extensions as developers are concerned.
I totally agree. I have felt personally like VS Code is the gateway drug to an IDE because I've always hated IDEs because there's a lot of setup required.
Yeah.
And
they're like 6 gigs.
Huge. And they're super slow. And this one is only as much of an IDE as you want it to be.
Yes.
And I love the fact that it is enough to kind of introduce you to some like really sweet products and is ready and waiting when you want them. That has been really inspiring to me. That kind of got me into, what was it? The thing that it introduced me to was TypeScript.
Oh yeah. The TypeScript support.
It was insane to me. Like seeing all of these, cause I was working on React and I saw all of these things that the TypeScript service was kind of knowing about my app and surfacing to me. And I thought, like, I wonder what it'd be like if I would just change one of these to a TSX file and like kind of see what happened. And then once I did, I was hooked.
Yeah, that's a good point. The TypeScript integration. That's actually how I moved over from Sublime, is that I was using a TypeScript on a project, not by choice. and I was really fighting it, you know, between the command line and the compiler, and it was throwing errors. I didn't know why. And somebody was like, you should try VS Code because it just works. And I was like, all right. And it does. It just works. And so that's, I think TypeScript's like the gateway drug to VS Code, which is then the gateway drug to, I like how we're
all
comparing developer tools to drugs.
To drugs.
We've gone off the rails.
So that reminds me, I think that both of us have at some point used a food truck as an analogy in React.
Right.
Tell me what you used it for.
I used it for a VS Code extension that would pull in all of my favorite other extensions. What you can do in code is you can create an extension or you can create like an extension that has extensions in it.
Okay, like a bundle of extensions?
Like a bundle of extensions. And so what I did with the food truck, I created a set of snippets that I called Simple React Snippets, almost as a joke, but I kept pulling in these different packages that had snippets in them, and it was like 6,000 React snippets. I'm like, what could possibly be in React that would require 6,000 snippets? And then a lot of people were using Simple React Snippets, and then I was using other things like auto imports, where you could, type in JSX what your component was, and it automatically pulls it into the file. I mean, there was just so much cool stuff.
Yeah.
So many developers created cool extensions. So I created this thing called the React Food Truck, which has, I think it's like 6 or 8 of these extensions, and I think it was John Papa's idea. He was like, you should create an extension package and call it the React extension package. And I was like, I'm going to call it the food truck. That's amazing.
So in React Food Truck, what are some of your favorite additions that gives you in VS Code?
Oh man. So definitely the auto imports one is really good. There's one called import cost. Mm-hmm. Have you seen this? This is from somebody named Wix.
I have seen it. Yeah. What does that one do?
It, when you import something at the top, it pulls in the size of the file and tells you, like, FYI, you just imported 265 kilobytes of JavaScript, just so you know.
Just so you know.
Right? You just packed this in your bag.
It's on you.
Right. So it's interesting how often, like, I'll pull something in, like, oh, I'm just going to use, you know, some third-party module, you know, library for this. And you pull it in. I'm like, oh, whoa.
Whoa, it's huge.
That is enormous. I'll just write that for loop myself, right? Yeah. And so it's really, really good for that. So import cost is one. I think the bracket pair colorizer is in there, which colors the brackets.
Okay.
In VS Code, which is more of a visual thing. I have this thing that I've become famous for, which is like I'm the last person on earth that uses a light theme. Everybody else uses dark themes. And I'm still using like a white,
bright white screen.
And Todd Motto told me one time, he's like, you realize that's like staring at a light bulb all day. Right? And I'm like, yeah, I don't care. And so now it's become a thing where I can't peel myself away from it because,
Because it's like staring at a light bulb.
It is, and I don't care.
It's that fly mind thing.
You're right. It's like me, and you're not going to break me kind of thing. let's see. What else is in the React food truck?
I noticed one that will take a template and convert it to a class name. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, that's part of Simple React Snippets is that when you... You know, like when you copy your Bootstrap navbar, because scientifically you can't build an application without Bootstrap.
Without, you can't.
Everybody knows. When you pull that in, you have a bunch of classes, and usually you run it, and nothing looks right, and you're like, why? And then you go back, like, oh, of course. And so I had added this like silly thing that I thought was going to resolve this, you know, huge controversy, which just basically just changes class to class name. Another one that's in there is paste style as JSX.
Oh, nice.
Which is really cool.
Very nice.
Yeah. So if you have like a block of CSS, you can just go paste it in, and instead of like converting it to an object, it just does it for you.
Awesome.
Right. So you can just grab a block of CSS, you know, copy paste from Stack Overflow as one does.
As one does.
Right.
As one does. That's awesome. So you have a talk today.
We have the last talk of the day, actually.
Yeah, that's a hard spot.
It is. But I think we have the whole room, too. It's a lot of folks.
Yeah, but I feel like you've marketed it pretty well.
I think we have sold it well. I think the concept sort of sells itself. So it's one of those things where every now and then you have a good idea, like once in 39 years.
Yeah. This one feels like a good one. So tell us what your talk's about.
So I'm doing this talk with my colleague and coworker, Jasmine Greenaway. And Microsoft asked us all to go early on to a boot camp for AI and ML because Azure is very invested in artificial intelligence and machine learning. And I think, you know, as far as their suite of tools goes, you know, probably is pushing the envelope more than anyone else in that direction. And so we went to this workshop on machine learning. And I mean, it was really in depth. And, you know, it's one of those things where it's like day two, it's 4 o'clock. You stopped paying attention at least an hour ago. For me, it was like I'd stopped paying attention like 6 hours ago, probably because I have a problem. I need to get some medication for that. But we were sitting there and we started just kind of joking around and saying, you know, we should use machine learning to solve like real problems, right? Things like, you know, who is Horse.js? And because we're JavaScript developers, we don't know anything about artificial intelligence or machine learning. We're like, well, we'll just throw a bunch of data up into the cloud. And then, you know, Azure's magic, it'll just spit out an answer because that's how machine learning
works. That's how clouds
work. Right, exactly.
Throw whatever at them. Right. And the answers come out.
Exactly. Isn't that machine learning?
Yeah.
Sounds like machine. I was like, we should submit this to JSConf because I know it's coming back. And I was like, I know if we submit this talk, I said, but if we submit it, we're actually going to have to do it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of terrifying. So we submitted it and sure enough, they took it and I called up Jasmine. I was like, Jasmine.
Some bad news.
Yeah, exactly. You're not going to like this. So she and I got to work and we worked for probably the last month, I think month and a half, maybe. On and off, you know, of course you're doing other things. I can't like just tell Microsoft like, hey, look, listen, I got real problems to solve here. I'm working on this Horse.js thing. So you have to leave me alone. So we worked on that on and off for the last couple months and we actually did not crack it until Friday of last week.
No way.
the last minute, it was Friday. We pulled it out, I think at about the end of the day, and I messaged her and I said, oh my gosh, I can't believe we did it. I did not think we were going to be able to do it, and we did it.
So did you have a contingency plan? I mean, you people are coming to see this talk, right?
I know. Well, the contingency is basically you get up there and say, we tried and we failed. I mean, that's all you really can do. Yeah, we were totally prepared to do that. Fortunately, I don't have to do that because I know. What's really funny is I'll talk to people and they'll say, I know who it is. You tell me who you think it is. And so I'll tell them and they'll be like, that's not who it is. And I think, oh, no. That is who it is. And when like, you see this
you
presentation,
spend a month you stressing out about whether or not you got it right.
Trust me. I've looked at way more data than I would like to admit to. I have run way more queries. I have run way more analysis. It became an unhealthy thing for a while there. I'd like, you know, sit up late at night, eyes all bloodshot, like I'm gonna find you.
I'm imagining you like Taken. You're like, I will find you.
Right. I have a special set of skills. Mediocre JavaScript skills coming for you.
But I got some big ass computers.
Right. That's the other thing. So that's what sort of the magic of it is that like we have all of Azure at our disposal here.
To find
like,
one
let's
person.
Just throw everything that we can at this. And so we did. I mean, we threw Cosmos DB, which is the database, because you're talking about tens of thousands of rows of data, and they're all linked, right? You're trying to find relationships in this basically a graph of Twitter data is what you're looking at. And even the person that sort of helped us through, we talked to somebody at Microsoft who's a PhD in, I think, like physics or something like that. Anyway, he's in the presentation, but he told me, he was like, the blocker for you here is going to be the sheer amount of data that you're working with. And he was dead right. And so we basically would just, you know, push Azure to the limit, and we get to spots where like we just run out of capacity, and I was like, add more capacity. Like we're just adding more capacity to it because we're crunching so much data.
Oh man.
But it was a lot of fun to do. And it's really fun to push on Azure and see like what can it do?
Yeah.
Let's find out.
Yeah.
So that was really cool.
That's awesome. Well, yeah. I am very excited to see the talk and see the big reveal at the end of it. I'm glad that it came together for you.
Yeah. It's gonna be the bombshell, man.
Is it a? Were you surprised?
I think, and I don't know if all big revelations are like this, but I think that when you know, and then you look back at the data, you're like, oh, obviously. Like when sure. I look at it now, I'm like, well, obviously.
Totally makes sense.
How could I not see that from the very beginning? But it's one of those things where I already know.
Yeah.
So, but I think for other people. So no, when I did figure out who it was, I was like a, you know, oh my gosh, I wonder if it's like that with detectives, like when they solve a crime, when they finally solve it, if they're like, oh my gosh, of course it is.
Of course. My gut knew all along.
Right. Or it's just, once you know, you can see through the data, like with crystal clarity. Yeah, it's really weird.
Cool. Well, let's wrap up.
Sure.
I have one last question for you. Who is doing some really awesome work right now in your mind in the JavaScript space?
Oh, wow. That's a heavy question. So there's a couple of folks. You know, I think the Vue project is really exciting to me. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge fan of Vue. I used to work on the Kendo UI project, and Vue and Kendo UI actually look quite similar. So I think is it Michael, the guy that created Vue? Is his name also Michael?
Oh,
no, it's Evan.
Evan.
I'm sorry.
Evan
and yeah, I know. And I know Sarah Drazer's on the core team. I think they have just done phenomenal work. That is such an interesting library. And I know it's quite popular as well. So I think that's really cool. I know Andre Staltz was working on something called Cycle.js.
Yeah.
Have you seen this?
Yep.
So I saw a presentation on Cycle and I thought, what? Like I did not understand it at all, but talk about doing some cool stuff.
Yeah.
Man.
Is that the talk where he talks about kind of UI being kind of like reactive to like user input or something? Like everything is a...
Yeah, it's everything. What it is I'm going to do it. I should not be the person to ask this question. Everything has like side effects.
Yeah.
So like when you do something, something happens and a side effect happens, and then they basically handle those side effects. That's a terrible explanation of cycle, but it's like React. It's just a different way of thinking about the problem. So I think that one's quite interesting.
And that sits on top of RxJS, right?
I think.
Okay. Now we're just both talking about things we don't know about.
Exactly. Let's just keep going. West out now. I think that the TypeScript project continues to be very interesting to me just because it really does bring JavaScript developers up into the modern age like really quickly. Yep. I mean, it does act as a transpiler. Mm-hmm. It does bring, so if you're building Node apps, you can, you know, you've got modules, you've got async awaits in Node now, but everything is just there for you to use. And so I think that it has this, TypeScript's got this weird unintended consequence of bringing people into modern JavaScript and they don't even realize that that's happened. So I think that that's really neat. I think that the serverless, sticking your JavaScript up in the cloud with no sort of runtime underneath it, just like I'm just going to throw a function up and hit it with an HTTP or timer trigger, is magical.
Yes.
And I didn't even realize that until we started building out, you know, a bunch of these services for this project, this idea that I'm just going to throw some code up and not really worry about it. I think that's really cool too. So
cool. Well, thanks so much for all your time, and thank you for...
Thanks for having me, and thank you for this donut. This thing is phenomenal.
Oh, it's my pleasure. VG Donut.
Yeah, are you going to pay for my gym membership now that I've eaten this?
You can bill me.
6,000 calories.
I'll send you my Venmo or whatever.
I appreciate it.
Cool. Yeah, so thanks for being on the show, and thank you for the talk. I'm very excited to hear this reveal today.
It's going
to
be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
All right, man.
Hopefully we'll see you again soon.
All right. Thank you.
This has been React Podcast, episode 24. For links to the people and projects mentioned in the show, visit reactpodcast.com/24. Sign up to support us on Patreon at reactpodcast.com/partner. We have some fun videos, outtakes, and sneak peeks at future episodes going live this week.